This recording is part of a series of podcasts in which the novel Dear Yoni is read aloud chapter by chapter by the author Lisa Picard. Please note that Dear Yoni contains sexually explicit language and scenes of a sexual nature. It is not suitable for anyone under the age of 18.
Hi, and welcome to this week's podcast recording. Last week, we read about the private swingers party that Jess and James attended, and also about their very first threesome with Candy. It really does seem like Jess and James are on a roller coaster ride with no way to get off. This week is actually a very sad chapter, and I hope you enjoy it nonetheless. Chapter 7. It ends with a whimper. I was about to go down on a woman for the very first time. As I teased her nipple into a taut peak with my lips and tongue, relishing the low moan that vibrated through her body, I was buzzing inside with the thought, I'm finally going to do this. Followed rapidly by the next thought, oh my God, what if I totally suck at this? What if she hates it and it gets super embarrassing and awkward and... Hey, Jess, where did you disappear to? Candy lifted her head to look at me. I feel like I'm all alone out in the limb up here. I felt absolutely mortified and simultaneously really grateful that James wasn't here to witness my rather inexpert foray into cunnilingus. He was in the kitchen cooking our dinner, so as to give me the opportunity to experiment without being observed. I had decided that it would be a good idea for me to build my own separate relationship with Candy. On some level, I felt that this would keep my relationship with James safer, make me feel less excluded, and also, well, add more fuel to our fire, as if we needed it. I'm sorry. I guess I was spacing out a little bit. I'm just so excited to finally be doing this. I licked her nipple and she smiled at me as she ran her fingers through my hair and then lay down again to enjoy my ministrations. It's definitely time for me to reciprocate and pay you back for the amazing orgasms you gave me last time, I whispered into Candy's ear. She just smiled lazily up at me and wiggled her hips as if to say, get on with it already. Determined not to lose focus again, I began to kiss my way down her gorgeous, voluptuous body, slowly running my hands over her hips, savoring the incredibly fine and delicate skin across her warm belly as I dipped my tongue into her belly button and circled around a few times before making my way to her pubic mound. I slipped just the very tip of my tongue into the top of her slit as I ran my fingers with the lightest of feathery touches down the front of her thighs and back up her inner thighs. I was rewarded by a soft moan, and I grinned to myself. I can totally do this, I thought, as I positioned myself between her legs and gazed for the first time at her wide open sex. My first thought was, my God, how beautiful. Of course, I had thoroughly studied my own pussy, using a hand mirror, just like every other good feminist who had read the 70s publication, Our Bodies, Ourselves, and had been exposed to the ideas of Gloria Steinem and Betty Friedan from my teens. I had also studied many photos of other pussies and had viewed several, albeit from a distance, at the swingers club. But there was something very special about being right there, able to fully observe another pussy in the flesh, wide open and glistening. I was struck by the extreme vulnerability of her position and what trust it took to allow another person this level of intimacy. I felt a sense of awe and wonder. The pussy, or the yoni, as I now prefer to call it, is, after all, the place from whence all life emerges. It is the sacred portal through which spirit is made manifest into form. I just sat there for a few moments, gazing at her, surprised by my emotional response to this moment. Then, as she again wiggled her hips a little, I ran my finger through the glistening folds in front of me, and suddenly all of my insecurities returned. It all seemed so very complicated down there. I couldn't quite figure out where all the relevant bits were to be located. This pussy, with its tightly whirled and complicated structure, was so very different from my own, or from others that I had seen, and suddenly I wasn't quite sure how to approach it. I experienced a brief moment of empathy for all the heterosexual men who are expected to just know how to make love to a woman. I mean, it's not as if we each come equipped with a personalized manual after all. But I knew that now was not the time for hesitation, and so I slowly ran my flat tongue up her pussy from the bottom to the top, and the moan and accompanying tilt of her hips informed me that I'd done something right. So I did it again, a few more times, and then ran the tip of my tongue gently through the folds, up one side and down the other. She bucked her hips, which seemed to indicate that I was on a winning wicket, so I continued exploring, enjoying the luscious softness of her folds on my tongue and on my fingers. She tasted and smelled absolutely intoxicating. Briefly, I thought of all the ugly misogynistic jokes that myself and every other woman I'd ever spoken to had suffered through over the years about how pussies smelt or tasted bad or were unattractive. It was absolute nonsense, and I had the fleeting thought that all women should have the experience of loving another pussy as a way to find true love and appreciation for their own. But then, as her hips began to trace a rhythmic rolling action, all thoughts left my mind, and I became fully present in this wonderful sacred moment with this beautiful woman. Placing a finger at the entrance to her vagina, I felt a surge of excitement run through my own pussy to feel her wetness. I'd been the cause of that. And when I entered her slowly and gently with two fingers and felt the walls of her vagina gripping my fingers, I lost myself in the sublime act of loving this woman. It felt so natural and perfect and incredible. And when she came pulsing around my fingers, I realized that I had straddled her thigh and was rubbing my own pussy against her leg. And very shortly, I orgasmed too. Relaxing with Candy afterwards, I felt wonderful and deeply connected to her. And when James finally came into the room to tell us that supper was ready, my huge grin was an indication of how comfortable and satisfied I felt. I truly thought that my jealousies and insecurities were a thing of the past as we enjoyed a delicious dinner together, laughing and flirting with each other. It felt like some wonderful, weird, and incestuous kind of family. But after dinner, as the three of us were once again engaging sexually, the jealousy returned. Candy spent as much time pleasuring me as she did on James, but there was, to my mind at least, a marked difference in the interactions. It was almost as if the time she and I spent playing around was simply a prelude to the main act, which was making love to my husband, while I watched. And even when I tried to vary things a bit, such as climbing on top of James and making love to him, while she watched for a change, somehow she ended up sitting on his face receiving cunnilingus, which then somehow became the main act, despite my own intimate connection with my husband. Something was very wrong. I was absolutely sure that James was falling in love with Candy, and the chemistry they had between the two of them was noticeably so much more than James and I had ever enjoyed, even with the added excitement generated by all of our sexual adventuring. There was a massive icy lump of fear and dread lodged in my chest that was making it very difficult to breathe, and I had no way of removing it. The morning after our third date with Candy, I lay waiting for James to wake up. When his eyes opened, I said, "James, please, I need to talk to you about something." In retrospect, Possibly I should have waited for a more opportune moment. But I had been lying awake for hours and was feeling pretty desperate by that time, and I really craved my husband's reassurance. Sadly, this was not forthcoming. After sharing my concerns with James, he said, "Honey, you're blowing everything out of all proportion. We're having such a great time with Candy. Why would you want to destroy that now with your insecurities? Everything's just fine. We discussed this all beforehand. This is what we both wanted. It was a fantasy we both shared. Don't spoil it now because of your jealousy and insecurity." I was absolutely shocked to hear these words coming from his mouth. Suddenly, it felt as if the bottom had dropped out of my world. For 8 years, it had been James and I, together against the world, and I had never, not even for a moment, doubted my husband's love and dedication to me. But now it felt as if I had lost my ally and my best friend, and I really didn't know how to respond to that. So I simply, and very stupidly, decided to ignore it and hope that things would improve with time. Surely James would soon grow tired of his new plaything, and then he and I would return to what we had been prior to Candy entering our world. But I was sadly deluded, as I discovered a few weeks later, when I returned home early from a cancelled client meeting, to find Candy's car parked outside my house. My heart sank into my shoes. But I kept telling myself that I was overreacting, up until the moment in which I found James and Candy in my bed, making love with such passion and such intensity, with such love, that I knew, without a shadow of a doubt, that my marriage was over. James almost seemed relieved to be caught out, and he didn't even try to justify his choices or to fight me when I asked for a divorce. It was really simple. My husband was in love with another woman, a woman who he claimed was his soulmate, and our marriage was over. It ended, not with a bang, but with a sad little whimper. And as I descended into a sea of self-loathing and self-recrimination, I knew that I had no one to blame but myself. I had invited this whole catastrophe into my life. Ironically, my attempt to save my marriage had directly led to its demise. For months, I wandered around in a state of dissociation. I was numb, half alive, in shock. Whereas James appeared to be doing really well on every level. He had finally received his long-awaited promotion to company financial director. He was in love and full of the joys of life, which, to his credit, he tried to hide during the excruciating interviews mediated by our respective lawyers. But I knew my husband. He was happier than I had ever seen him. And me, I was totally miserable and completely lost. To his credit, James didn't fight me on any of the divorce arrangements, and everything proceeded rapidly and as painlessly as possible. And so it was that, after a few short months, I found myself alone and rattling around in our home, which had suddenly grown way, way too big for my needs. Day 10. Dear Yoni, the 6 months that followed that dreadful day when I found James and Candy together in our bed were some of the most difficult you and I had ever experienced. Our relationship was pretty much destroyed. I think that on some level I blamed you, or at least my sexuality in general, for the situation. Some part of me believed that if I hadn't been so curious about trying new things, if I hadn't been searching for something more in my sex life, then perhaps my marriage would still be intact. But that was all happening at a very subconscious level. On the surface, I was completely numb. And so were you. In fact, most of my life force went into hibernation, leaving only the barest minimum I required to drag myself through each day. It felt as if I was wrapped in thick, muffling cotton wool, and I really didn't feel anything much at all, which was probably a mercy, as I was able to dispassionately observe James packing up all his belongings and moving out of our house and out of my life. Even the appearance in my mailbox of the divorce papers hardly elicited a flicker of emotion. I simply signed them without any fuss right there and then on the kitchen table, and then immediately went up to bed, where I slept for 24 hours straight. To his credit, James did try to talk to me on several occasions about what had happened, but I just stared at him dully, watching his lips move and hearing sounds coming out of his mouth, but not being able to make any sense out of what he was saying. It was as if he was speaking a completely incomprehensible foreign language, and anyway, no words or emotions or thoughts could penetrate the thick, soupy fog in which I was suspended. James was actually very decent about the whole divorce settlement, signing the house and contents over to me in their entirety, as well as several other assets and investments. So at least I had no financial concerns to worry about. Of course, he was now earning a considerably larger salary in his new role, which would benefit Candy and not myself. This, despite me having been the one who had supported and encouraged him throughout all of our lean years together, as I would often bitterly reflect. But at least I had no immediate need to rush into earning money, and so I simply stopped accepting freelance work projects, reading my email, or answering my phone or doorbell. I'm not entirely sure how I spent the following 6 months of my life, but somehow they passed. I know that I must have left the house to buy food and to do basic chores, but I honestly don't remember doing so. Family and friends kept checking in on me, but I had no energy whatsoever to spend on these relationships, and my standard response to any query was, "I'm fine." I kept asking people to give me time and space, and eventually they got the message and left me to my own devices. I know that I did an inordinate amount of sleeping, but little else. Then, one morning, about 6 months after walking in on my husband and Candy, I awoke early with a burning sensation on my arms and legs. With considerable difficulty, I opened my eyelids, which were glued together after 18 solid hours of sleep. I saw that the early morning sun was streaming through the window onto my naked body, lying tangled in the rather dirty sheets. I couldn't remember when last I had changed them. Suddenly, after 6 months of numbness, I was feeling again. Everything. My skin felt exquisitely sensitive. My entire body felt like one raw, exposed nerve. The sensation of the sheet against my naked body was intolerable. The birdsong was unbearably loud. Even the air in my lungs felt abrasive. How, I wondered, was I going to survive feeling this much? And then the emotions came. They began to well up in my body. First came grief, raw and bleak and devastating. A tsunami of intensity raged through my being, lifting me up and tossing me down in its wake. It scoured through my body, filling every cell with torment. For a solid week, I howled and wailed and sobbed, at times retching with agony. I simply surrendered to the emotional onslaught, a small piece of flotsam tossed about on an ocean of grief. I'd fall asleep at some point, and then there would be a few hours of respite. Some mornings, I would open my eyes, and for a few precious seconds, I would be calm and at peace. And then, out of nowhere, another wave would rip through my body and carry me away, senseless, to a pace of infinite sorrow. Then one morning I awoke and lay in my bed, flinching, as I waited for the now familiar pain to arrive. But it didn't. Instead, as I lay there, savoring the peace and quiet, gradually a different emotion began welling up. From deep within my belly, a fire slowly started to smolder. Rage. Soon it flared up in my chest, my throat and my face, burning through my fleeting peace of mind. All of my self-recrimination, self-pity and victimhood burned up in the fire of righteous indignation. It lifted me right up off the bed, and I raged through the house, destroying every vestige of sentiment, every tender memory. I grabbed my treasured photo albums and, using a letter opener, I gouged James's eyes out of every single photo. In several, I stabbed him through his evil black heart as well. On some level, I knew that I was being melodramatic, but the sheer exhilaration of the destruction provided its own fuel as I ripped through the house like a fury, destroying every single item that had sentimental value or was in any way associated with my marriage. Cushions were shredded, paintings ripped to pieces, my wedding ring was flushed down the loo. The logical, mature adult within was completely overtaken by a furious child having a monumental temper tantrum. Love letters from James were burned, and I smashed with a hammer to fine dust the little terracotta bullfrog next to the garden pond that James had loved so much. James's favorite apron that he wore to cook me breakfast on a Sunday morning, I tore to bits with my bare hands, tearing several nails as I did so. But the very worst of the destruction, I saved for the lifelike dildo that James had bought for me, ostensibly to keep me company when he was away on business. That I not only ripped apart with a kitchen knife, but I flung the pieces all over the room, then collected them and burned them. The acrid stench of burning rubber, the perfect olfactory accompaniment to my rage. For a few hours, I raged like a tornado through my house, until finally I collapsed on the floor of the living room, in a pile of cushion stuffing, shredded paper, soil from an upturned delicious monster, dust and debris, and I lay breathing hard, my anger finally burnt out. I closed my eyes, took a deep breath, and scanned my body. What was I feeling now? And then it started. At first, a tiny little giggle from deep within my chest, followed by another, followed by a chortle, then a guffaw, and then I was subsumed by waves of hilarity. I rolled about on the floor, clutching my stomach, laughing hysterically. At some point, the thought did occur to me that I might just possibly be going stark raving bonkers. But that made me laugh even more. Suddenly, the whole drama of the situation struck me as completely ridiculous, and I just allowed myself to wallow in the craziness. Eventually, I must have fallen asleep, absolutely worn out from the emotional rollercoaster of the past week. The following morning, when I awoke, I felt reborn, as if some massive weight had shifted from my shoulders. Almost ready to start living again. I stretched, relishing the feel of my body after so many months of utter disconnect. And then you, my dearest Yoni, gave a small but definitely pleasurable twitch to remind me that you were still there and still willing to engage with me when I was ready. Plenty of time for that, I told myself, as I stretched out my protesting limbs and painfully got up off the floor with a deep groan. I spent the day stripping my bed, tackling the Everest of dirty laundry and scouring every inch of my home. When I finally sat down to a well-deserved glass of wine after a shower that evening, I felt as if I had sloughed off a mountain of dirt and grime from my body, my soul, and my home. I pulled my laptop closer and started to wade through the pages and pages of emails that I had neglected for so long. This took me an hour or two, and when I was finally finished, I had started the shutdown process to prepare for bed, when I suddenly remembered that I hadn't checked my Facebook feed and notifications for over 6 months. Refilling my wine glass, I settled in to catch up on friends and family. What a monumental mistake that was. Within minutes, of course, I found myself on James's Facebook timeline, obsessively scrolling through all the new happy couple pics of him and Candy doing cute, cool, fun, couple-y things together. Even pics of several social events with mutual friends of ours. A deep sense of betrayal settled in the pit of my stomach. But much worse was to come. The final set of photos, taken just the previous week, literally stole my breath away. My knees collapsed beneath me and I sank to the floor, heaving as I struggled for air, my laptop falling at an awkward angle between the couch and the floor. "Two major celebrations in one," the title crowed. And there they were. James, with his arms around Candy from behind, his hands gently cradling the small swell of her belly. The very self-same James who had, for the past 8 years, told me that there was still plenty of time to get pregnant and that he just wasn't ready yet. And it was their engagement party, too. I sat dead still for several minutes, waiting for the first emotional shockwave to pass over me. I felt dizzy and nauseated, alternately ice cold and boiling hot. I gulped down my wine and poured yet another glass as I just sat there paralyzed, trying hard to catch my breath. Why hadn't my friends and family warned me? But then I remembered several visits from my friends, during which they had tried to talk to me about James and his new life, which I had simply shut down over and over again. Obviously, they had decided that I needed time before confronting this devastating news. The next few days I spent either drunk or hungover, and I reverted to all my old patterns of sleeping too much and not washing or eating properly. But by the end of the week, a far more adult part of myself decided to take charge. I knew this behavior couldn't continue. So I put away the wine and opened the fridge door to find something healthy to eat. But I was confronted with a limp, rotten lettuce in the crisper drawer, 5 takeout containers with leftovers, 2 half-empty bottles of wine, and several bottles of crusty condiments. Clearly, I desperately needed to do some grocery shopping. Not bothering about my appearance, I grabbed my car keys and headed off to the closest grocery store. As I was wandering down the fresh produce aisle, my blood suddenly ran cold to hear a familiar laugh. Ducking behind a freezer just in time, I peered around the side to see James and Candy pushing a trolley and laughing, both looking so happy and so well and so in love. I noticed the way he looked at Candy and my heart just about exploded. I realized that I had never, not even when we had first been dating, ever seen James looking at me like that. That was the moment when I finally realized that I needed to pull my life back together again. I needed to find myself, the self that I now was, post James. Mercifully, they reached the end of the aisle and turned into the next one. I rapidly jumped up from my hiding place, only to startle a toddler in a pushchair parked on the other side of the freezer. He promptly began wailing at the top of his lungs as his mother glared daggers at me. I suddenly caught sight of myself in the reflective glass front of a freezer. I looked like a dangerous madwoman, wild, dirty, unbrushed hair standing at all angles, wrinkled leggings with baggy knees, a stained, oversized t-shirt, sleep-encrusted eyes sporting massive purple bags beneath them. No wonder I'd scared the poor child so badly, wincing apologetically at the mom and mumbling, "Sorry." I reached into the freezer and pulled out a large tub of Rocky Road ice cream and raced for the tills. Healthy eating could wait for another day. Today I needed fortification to cope with this latest crisis. But this experience did indeed shock me out of the rut I had been wallowing in, and I gradually began to return to life again, albeit a different life from the one I had enjoyed before. Over the next while, I did a lot of reflection on the events of the past few years, and indeed on my entire life. I gradually began to realize that my reaction to the ending of my marriage had been rather extreme. After all, James and I hadn't really been a match made in heaven. I had often felt a bit bored and frustrated, even during our time of sexual experimentation. Although James definitely was polite and intelligent, Mostly considerate and financially stable, he definitely wasn't a live wire. Our life together had often been quite dreary and lacking in excitement or sexual chemistry. We hadn't even really talked or connected much at all. It began to dawn on me that the feelings of abandonment, enormous grief and rage that I had experienced after my marriage ended, were possibly indicative of an earlier wounding. Perhaps my divorce had triggered deep pain from my childhood. I realized that I needed some help in dealing with the closet full of things that I had steadfastly been refusing to look at. On some level, I was aware that I'd been filling that closet up for the duration of my entire life. So I found an excellent therapist who helped me to delve deeply into many unresolved issues from my childhood, my early relationships, and my marriage. After 6 months of twice-weekly sessions, I eventually found a new sense of equanimity in my life. I now felt calmer and far more centered. My self-esteem was far better than I had ever dreamed was possible for me. I'd worked through my issues around abandonment by my mother. I now knew that these deeply suppressed feelings had been triggered by James cheating on me. I'd finally accepted all that had happened, and I was ready to move forward with my new single life. I suppose that this is why I was soon to be given a wonderful gift, which was to change the entire course of my life and my aspirations for the future. And that's it for today, dear listener. Join me again next week. Bye-bye.